Once upon a time, a little girl helplessly watched as liquid gold spun a web across her tiny frame, racing to wrap her up in an icy cocoon. Her mouth hung agape. Her limbs stayed outstretched toward a father she could not reach. Her legs refused to respond, to carry her far away. Only the sound of bones crackling, drying into rigid metal fossils, sliced through the night air. The gold hummed a haunting lullaby as it pooled in her ears, and specks of gold whirled across her vision. She had time for one last breath, but her throat hardened before the air ever reached her lungs. Finally, a burst of gold clenched her heart and squeezed until blood ran out of it, hardening like candle wax as she succumbed to the golden curse. That's a quote from A Touch of Gold by Annie Sullivan. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler.
Hi, I'm Bethany Finger, the host of Prince Kai Thampod, a Marissa Meyer Book Club podcast. Join me every week during my read-along journey through all of the books by author Marissa Meyer, one chapter at a time, spoiler-free. Each episode will feature a different guest, new fan art, and laughter and joy through reading. You can find Prince Kai Thampod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all other listening platforms. And now, back to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. I am very glad to have you here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you especially to my Patreon members who just continue to support me. I really appreciate it. And fun note, I actually have one of my Patreon members as a guest today. And today we are going to be talking about A Touch of Gold by Annie Sullivan. And this is a very special episode because not only do I have my friend and Patreon, Sarah, as a guest, but Annie Sullivan herself is also here with us. And so I am very excited to welcome her. We are going to, Sarah and I are going to ask Annie some questions, but then we are also going to have a plot discussion as well. And as normal, we will have a spoiler-free section first, and then I will give you a warning before we head into some spoilers about A Touch of Gold. Well, welcome, Sarah and Annie. It's great to have you both here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I am too. This is fun.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk with readers and writers and everyone like that.
Me too. It's so much fun to be able to get to just hear different perspectives on books and what people think, and then be able to have the authors on too, and to kind of find out some of the behind the scenes info and what they were thinking and why they did this and what their writing process is. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, let's see. If you're not familiar with Annie's work, Annie has written A Touch of Gold and then the sequel, A Curse of Gold. And she has also written the book Tiger Queen, which I'm going to admit, I still haven't read that one yet, but it is on my list. And Sarah keeps telling me too that I need to read it. So
I listened to the audiobook and the story is fantastic.
Oh, yay.
It's also really beautiful. I want it for my bookshelf because it's pretty.
Aw, yay. It's weird though, because I think A Touch of Gold has a British narrator. So then everyone, when they hear me speak, they're like, wait, you're not British. And I'm like, oh, you listened to the audiobook, didn't you? Like, that's how I know.
Yes. All right. Well, Annie, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Annie Sullivan. I love writing fairy tales and strong female main characters and just fun adventures that kind of get you away from this world for a little bit. Outside of that, I love to travel when it's safe. I live in Indianapolis. I'm hoping to get a puppy soon. I like to read, write. I do some running, some kickboxing. Kind of all over the place. So I do a lot of things, I guess.
That's good. It's good to keep busy. I do a lot of things as well because I'm a teacher, so I have the summer off right now, which is great. But I also have this podcast, and I'm also an editor and contributing writer for a local blog where I live. There's a lot of that going around, but keeps me busy.
Yeah, but all good things. So that's awesome.
Yes. Sarah, how are you doing? Anything new going on? Are you reading anything new?
I am still making my way through Realmbreaker.
Well, it's really big.
It is big, and it's a very, there's a lot of different points of view and a lot of things that go on in the story. And so it's taking me a while to get through it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's actually one of the 2 weeks that my job is slow at work until the week after next. And then it will be insane until like December. So
gotcha. Get all the reading in that you can right now.
Yes.
Read.
Yeah. I work in higher education. So
Okay.
Start coming back to school and everything. It's going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
I'm definitely taking advantage of having the summer off, and like I'm actually reading during the day, which is like abnormal because normally I just read right before I go to bed because I don't have any time to do it otherwise. So it's actually really nice to be able to like have an hour or so where I can just sit on my living room couch at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and just read. Like it's so luxurious. I love it.
That's so nice. Those like, I don't even call them lazy days, because like they're just like necessary mental health days where like you just need a break and it feels good to, yeah, just sit and read for a little while. I think we all need those from time to time.
Agreed. I just started reading a brand new book. It actually hasn't even published yet. It comes out in August, but I got an arc of it. It's called Mercury Boys, and it's by, I don't know how to say her first name, Chandra or Chandra Prasad. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just butchered that. But it's really good. Like it's very intense, but I think it's also going to be a really, really good read. So I'm excited to finish that. And then I get to talk with her next month. She's going to be on the podcast too. So super fun.
Yeah. You get to talk to lots of fun people.
I know. I have just like, for some reason recently, I've just gotten like a boatload of emails from publicists and publishers like, hey, would you read this book and have this author on your podcast? And I'm like, sure, why not? So I have quite a few of them lined up. But
hey, look at you. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's fun. But So I'm going to try and do like regular episodes in between. And this one is fun because we get to do like both. We're going to ask you questions, but then we are totally going to do a complete plot discussion as well, because I need to. It's so good.
Yes. Get those burning questions out of the way.
Yes. All right. Well, Annie, why don't you tell everybody what A Touch of Gold is about?
Yeah. So A Touch of Gold is about the cursed daughter of King Midas, who, she used to be a golden statue after her father turned her to gold, but now she's been turned back into a living, breathing human being, but she has some lasting side effects. One of which, she can sense the other objects that her father turned to gold. And when those objects get stolen, she has to be the one to go out and bring them back because her father is fading away without the cursed objects by his side. So it's a fun fantasy adventure filled with pirates and sirens and more. Oh my.
I love a good story with pirates in it. One of my favorite things. Oh yeah. Sarah and I have talked about this multiple times, right, Sarah?
A good pirate story cannot be beat.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. We totally need more pirate, like really good pirate books. Like send them my way, you guys. Cause
I have really high on my to be read list, Daughter of a Pirate King.
Oh yeah.
I think I like
that one.
Very excited about it. I read her recent one, Blade of Secrets, and it was fantastic. And I was like, I need to read everything this woman has written.
Yeah, her Viking one, which I know it's like right back there on my bookshelf, and I can't think of the name, but it's like a warrior in the wild or something like that. I need to read that one too.
Ooh, a book.
Anyway, back to Annie's book.
Yes.
You railed us.
I will say though, first, a book about Vikings I need to read. Like I am obsessed with Vikings. My husband and I have watched and devoured the Vikings TV show that was on, was it Discovery? I think it was Discovery or History Channel. It was History Channel. So good. And now I'm like obsessed with Viking stuff. So I'll have to check that one out. But yes.
Yeah, so many good ones out there. Like Fable, I think, is that one, Viking?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Fable, it's not really Viking. It is more pirate-ish.
Yeah. It's like an interesting mixture there.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's not like full pirate, but it has lots of pirate stuff. It is kind of weird, but it works really well, and it's a great book. So.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about A Touch of Gold. So what drew you to the story of King Midas enough to make you want to retell that story?
Well, you know, oddly enough, going back to pirates, it was actually after watching Pirates of the Caribbean and thinking about it. And I was thinking about all the cursed gold that they have to go and track down. And I was like, man, if only you could like absorb that gold or find another way to kind of carry it around. And so I just got to thinking about cursed gold, which led to King Midas, which, you know, I want to write about strong female characters. So I was like, what about his daughter? You know, she's such a forgotten character in the original myth. She's just a means to an end of like, oh, I learned my lesson that it was bad to turn things to gold because I turned my daughter to gold. But I'm like, what would happen after you get turned back? Like, you know, you may not have a great relationship with your father and you may have some lasting gold issues going on. Like, you know, things happen. And so I was like, I just have to explore this story. So I just went down that pathway and didn't stop.
And you're right.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
I did not know about his daughter. Like, I didn't know the myth well enough to know that he had a daughter that he turned to gold. Mm. And I really loved that aspect because it was not only telling a story that didn't exist before, but it was telling one about a character I didn't know existed before.
Yes. And I love to just find those. Okay. Full disclosure. I consider myself a forgotten middle child. I'm one of four and I'm the third out of the four. So I have to like share being a forgotten middle child because, you know, there's two of us. So I get even less attention than the normal middle child. So I look for those characters who are, you know, forgotten in their own stories and, you know, try to figure out who they are, what is their story? I want to bring that to life and give them a chance to be in the spotlight.
I love that. See, well, I'm the oldest and not a middle child, but there's only two of us anyway. But
sure, your oldest child there.
But see, I know. But see, I've always had this thing where I've had an issue still of not feeling wanted sometimes because my parents named me after a woman in the Bible named Leah, whose husband did not want her. She was the unwanted one. And he's like, no, I just want your sister, Rachel. And my quick side note, my parents almost named my younger sister, Rachel. Thanks to heavens, they did. Oh gosh, I would have had a complex my entire life growing up. It's a good thing they didn't, but so anyways, I can kind of relate. But I love that. I love that. I like, just like, cause it's kind of like too, like taking a villain and writing their backstory, you know, a book about them. I love that too.
Yes. Because I mean, and I love just writing even like strong side characters. Everyone has a story and you have to bring those elements into it in order to make the world feel real, to make the characters feel real.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Sarah, why don't you go ahead and ask Annie a question?
So speaking of your characters, were there any characters in A Touch of Gold that were based on like real people? And did you use any character traits of people you know? Can you tell us who they might be based on?
A Touch of Gold is harder. There is someone in Tiger Queen that's based off a real person, but can't talk about that one because someone hasn't read it yet. No. I would say A Touch of Gold, I think every character has a small piece of me in it, you know, whether it's a good characteristic or a bad one. I think Hetty has a lot of me. I think Cora is a lot of my shyer side, I guess, my quieter side. And then Hetty is my more like headstrong side of like, I'm going to get what I want, you know? And so I think those two are very kind of an interesting mix of who I am. I wouldn't say there's anyone that was like completely based off of a real person, though. I think they're all pretty just kind of fictional in my mind. But there have definitely been some inspirations and some other things that I'm working on now. I'm definitely pulling from real life people. So that'll be interesting to see if they if I don't tell them.
See, when I write for the blog that I edit for, I at least have this like cover of if I want to write about somebody too, like I just make the post anonymous, like if I don't necessarily want them to figure it out. So I mean, I did write one once where I made it anonymous and then I was like, you know, I do wonder though if my friends read this, if they're still gonna figure out that it was me that wrote it. So
Yes, so you have to be so careful with names and things, because if you name someone something and you like know someone with that name, they're like, oh, is this made after me? Is this a terrible character? And you're like, no, I just picked a name. Like, sorry.
So what you're saying is you don't know someone who is exactly like the villain of this story.
Right. I would say it's definitely a mashup of like 40 different kind of characters either that I've seen in movies. Like, he's got a little bit of Captain Jack Sparrow, but a lot of like, I don't know. I think of him a lot of like, in the movie, is it Ever After with Drew Barrymore? There's that like, not so creepy, but kind of creepy. I think he's like French guy who like tries to like buy her or something. And he's like very thin with like a mustache. And I'm like, he's got a little bit of them, you know, him thrown in there. And like, you know, but like, oh, I don't know. So like, it's just a lot of things. And then you just like look for characteristics and features that are like, yeah, that makes him sound creepy. Let's go with that.
I like it. Sarah, you had another question too about King Midas. Right.
I was curious how much research you had to do on the King Midas myth.
You know, I did some. I wouldn't say I did exhaustive research because I really didn't want to be too, I didn't want to be too close to the myth, but not too far either. You know, there are so many different versions where, you know, sometimes, yeah, I don't think he has a daughter, but most of the time he does. And there's different ways he got his power to turn things to gold. Like, it's usually through Dionysus, the god kind of drunkenness and chaos and whatever else he is, but sometimes it's because he like helped him, because one of his satyrs like got caught in King Midas's vineyard and he lets it free, and so then he's like, oh, you were so nice, here, have this gift. So in my version, it's not too spoilery, but it's, you know, it's kind of, it's not quite the gift that you think it is, you know. So yeah, I did do research. I read a bunch of different myths and looked at, you know, the origins of the gods and the whole kind of Greek structure. But other than that, I just wanted it to kind of, you know, take its own shape as well and kind of be its own place too.
I think it does that. It was a very immersive world. And usually you don't get stuff that's that immersive in fantasy without it being like super thick. One of the things that I really appreciated about the book is that you, like, I felt like I was a part of this fantasy world, which is so nice without it being like really thick and very heavy, like a Lord of the Rings high fantasy that has this huge world behind it. And you have to learn all about the world before you can get any of it.
See, I think Tiger Queen even has more world building. For those of you guys who aren't familiar with it, it's about a warrior princess who fights suitors in an arena to win her right to rule. But like, it's in this desert and there's all these creatures that, you know, I basically came up with. So I did a lot. I just love coming up with creatures and worlds and different fantasy powers and things. So that's kind of my sweet spot, I guess.
Yes, Tiger Queen was very immersive. I was talking about it at lunch with a bunch of my workmates one day. And I was like, and there's this hill where this thing comes. And I was like, what are you reading?
Oh, man. All right.
And I had a neighbor who was like, man, Annie, your mind must be a weird place. And I was like, you have no idea.
Oh, man. Fun, weird, creative, you know, whatever. It all goes together.
Yeah, you want it all. It's one package.
It's fun. She wants weird, you know, she thinks your mind goes to a weird place. She's clearly not read books by Pierce Brown, like Red Rising. Oh. There's definitely some interesting characters and things in those books. Even Realm Breakers got some very interesting stuff in it, but
it does.
Yeah. Good luck, Sarah. No, I'm just kidding. I actually really liked that book. It just, there's a lot. But
yes, I'm currently seeing the beginnings of what I am hoping is an enemies to lovers trope. I can't, that's my favorite. And so I'm hoping that's what I'm seeing, but I don't know.
You're like, maybe. Just be
enemies to enemies. Who knows?
Well, and I'm not going to tell you. You're just going to have to wait and finish. But speaking of love tropes, okay, I did want to talk about the love trope in this book. Okay, because I was like thinking about it and I'm like, I don't even know how to describe this one because there's like love and then betrayal and then another love. And then, and I was like, yeah, I don't know how to describe this one, but I liked it.
Like a love shipwreck. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to describe it either. I'm like, I don't know. It could go a lot of different ways here.
That is a good way, a love shipwreck.
Yes. Because there's three, but it's not really a triangle because no one waffles back and forth.
Right?
Yeah.
On who they want to be with.
And plus people ship people. So like there is that ship in there, but there's also a wreck. Oh, boom.
Totally there you go.
Yes.
You guys.
Nice.
You're going to create a whole new genre. It's going to be the love shipwreck.
That has nothing to do with pirates.
You've just coined a brand new love trope. I like it.
I love it.
What is your favorite love trope either, or well, I guess both, like to read and to write?
Oh, I love enemies to lovers. Like, I think that's just my favorite. I mean, like there's something to be said about like, friends to lovers, but I'm like, yeah, okay, we all knew that was gonna happen. But like the enemies, like you gotta earn it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I think that just makes it more exciting. And it just adds a little bit of tension and like, you know the stakes are high and you know there's like a chance of betrayal and you just never know. Especially if it's a new author, like it could be a shipwreck or to lovers.
That is so true. Like that's why enemies to lovers is actually my favorite as well, because I feel like it's just, like it's an adventure. You never know. Like you're like, okay, they're going to fall in love. Maybe they're going to be together. But then you're like, ooh, but this could happen. And what if they betray each other? And then like you don't ever really know. It's not ever really cut and dry. And it's just kind of keeps you guessing the whole time. It's
a lot of fun. It also guarantees a slow burn.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
I love it. It's my favorite. My second favorite is probably Strangers to Lovers.
Yeah.
I have a very hard time with friends to lovers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against it, but, you know, like, I've had a choice, enemies to lovers is the
way.
So
you knew her for 20 years and you just didn't, it never
occurred. Right, like you had your chance.
And all of a sudden he's like, I've loved you forever. And I'm like, no, you haven't actually.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
No, that's great. I love it. Sarah, did you have any other questions for Annie?
I did have one other question. Did you know how it was going to end when you started? But did you know how Curse of Gold was going to end too?
I pretty much, like, when I start a book, I usually know where it's going to end, but I don't know what's, so I'm a pantser. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like plotter and pantser and talked about that, but I'm a total pantser. I fly by the seat of my pants. I don't know what's going to happen until it happens, except I usually know the ending. So I know where we're going. I just don't know how we're going to get there. Like that's usually, I have like a very vivid image in my mind of like, this is what's going to happen. I just have to get us there somehow. So, same with Tiger Queen, same with A Curse of Gold. Like I usually know, I know the end of like the final kind of big scene. It's just a matter of figuring out where we're stopping along the way.
Well, as a reader, I definitely feel that, particularly with Tiger Queen, is that I was like, this is where I think it's going and this is how I think it's going to get there. And then it doesn't get there though. These two books do the same thing where you're like, I feel like this is how it ends. And then it sort of ends that way, but not really, so it keeps you guessing. And then things happen along your way and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, what?
Right? Exactly. Because you're just like, oh man, that just happened. Because I'm like, oh, wow, that did just happen, didn't it? So, okay. You know, like I had no idea we were going to go to like the Island of Lost Souls or that we were going to meet some sirens and things like that. Like it was just kind of like, oh, well, that's just okay. We're going.
All right. And it all works out and it works really well together.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I would say actually the beginning is the hardest for me on any story because I usually, because I'm such a pantser, I might go through like 10 different drafts at the beginning just to like find the one where I'm like, yes, this is the character who is going to end up in that final scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's hard because a lot of beginning writers, you might just think, okay, well, I have to use the beginning I started with. And no, sometimes I will throw out 8 chapters and start again.
Wow.
Yeah, it can be really heartbreaking. It still hurts. Even as, you know, a published author, I'm still like, why?
And I can tell you as a reader, when we know that an author is writing a book and then we find out that they've like ditched that many chapters, it's hurtful too. But I know it's a process and I'm always like grateful in the end for the end result. So
Right. It always makes it better. But yeah, figuring out where to start is always such an important part too, you know, like, and I love a strong opening line. Like those are also my jam. Like if you've got a good one, that'll just hook people and keep them reading for a good long while. Even if the rest isn't great, like you can get by with a little bit more as long as that opening line is like dynamite.
I agree completely. I am definitely a sucker and a big fan of like opening lines that just hit you. Like, Sarah and I have both read and we did Stalking Jack the Ripper together. I mean, the opening line of that book is like about her like having a knife and slicing somebody open. And if that doesn't catch your attention, I don't know what will.
Right. I think, what is it? I think it's Shadows Between Us that starts out with a line that's something like, they'll never find the body of the only man I ever loved or something like that. And I'm just like, oh boy, where is this going? Like, what is happening here? You know?
Mm-hmm. So. Yes. I'm excited to read that one. How often do you get a story that is about a villain?
I know. Like,
here's a not a good person. We're going to write their story.
Yes. See, that's so hard though, because it like is such a Slytherin romance that I'm like, I'm such a Gryffindor that I'm like, oh, how could you?
Yes.
You know what kind of villain story I would love? Honestly, I'm no pressure though, Annie, but I would love a villain story about Captain Skulls. Like I could totally devour an entire book just about that man. I mean,
I actually, in one of the original drafts, I went through his backstory very briefly to kind of show you how he ends up to be who he is. And it just got cut along the way of like, oh, it's slowing down the story. There's too much, you know? So we just cut it but it's there. And you never know, maybe it'll resurface somewhere, or I can always do like a little giveaway of something, you know? You never know. I keep everything. I've got like 1,000 drafts saved in different places, so.
And you never know.
I don't want to get too spoilery, but there is always potential for more after A Curse of Gold.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I've had a lot of people ask me that question.
For one, would love a travel log of Hedy and Rat.
Yes, that is something I've definitely thought about. I'm not going to promise it, but I have certainly thought about it.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, I think that we should head into our plot discussion now with spoilers. I think I'm so ready. I'm sure you guys are too.
Spoiler time.
We're getting dangerously close already.
I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, how much can I say? I don't know. I mean, I do know, but I'm just like, nah, whatever.
So if you are listening and you have not yet read A Touch of Gold and you don't want anything spoiled, then please stop right here, but check the show notes for today so that you can get all the information on where to follow Annie and purchase her books, but then come back and listen to the rest of the episode after you have read the book. And of course, if you have read the book or if you just don't care about spoilers, then by all means, please continue listening. All right. You have been warned. It is time for our discussion with spoilers. All right. Okay. So since we were just mentioning Hedy and Rat, I'm telling you, one of like my favorite fictional character couples I've ever read. Like I love the scene when they meet and they're down below deck and he's chomping on the pickle. And she's like, pickles are gross, but she takes it. And then the next thing we know, she's like shoving them all down like they're candy to be with him. It's hilarious.
And it's so funny because like when I started the story, I had no idea that Hedy was going to show up on the boat. Like that barrel came on and I was like, oh, Hedy's in that barrel. Cool. Okay. You know, like she wants an adventure too. And so I love her spark, her spontaneity and her like her drive. Like I said, she's got a little bit of me in there. So I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that she was not who I expected her to be. Like when I first met her, I was imagining something like a bit of a wicked stepsister type. Spoiled, very beautiful, very selfish, focused on her own gain, superficial kind of person. And then she goes along on the boat and I'm like, oh, she's going to be such an annoyance. This prissy little miss that can't handle pirate life on the boat. And then that's not who she is at all. And I love it. And you get to know her and it's so much fun. I was terrified for both books that one of them was going to die because I like them being together in the end.
I know. I don't like to kill off characters, but my editors are always like, someone's got to die, Annie. And I'm like, do they? Do they?
Like, if she takes Hedy or Rat from me, I'm going to be so mad.
I couldn't do that to you guys. Like,
you could take them both. You cannot take one. And leave.
I mean, I did it to Phipps. Yeah. So, like, I don't know. You know, no one is safe, apparently.
No. But Phipps, it was sad that he died. But what was I loved was that, you know, we still have his twin. And then we get another character in the family introduced as well in the next book. So I don't want to say too much, but so we do, you know, we still have some representation there, and it is sad when Phipps dies, but it makes sense.
Phipps is the one who dies, but Phipps and Phipps. Cause you know, gotta have rhyming twin names.
Yep.
Phipps dies, but Phipps is the one who lives. So,
I appreciated the exploration of grief that you did there. Particularly how grief must be different for someone who's a twin.
Yeah.
I mean, grief for a sibling is, of course, probably horrifying. Right? I can only imagine it is like accelerated and more extreme when it is a twin. And so I really appreciated that, like, that seriousness that it brought to the story, but it didn't bring the whole story down, which was...
Right. And I think a lot of stories do, they kind of like just gloss over grief. And I think grief is something that's so universal and something we all experience at some point. And so I do really want to like bring that into my writing and show like, you know, you might experience this, but there are ways past it and you can get out of that darkness if you're stuck there.
Yeah. And it continues into the next book, which is, you know, you touch on obviously how you have to handle grief when you're still on the ocean, fighting Captain Skulls, you've got to get home, you're trying not to die, and so you can only process it a certain amount, and it continues, and I really liked that.
Yeah, I mean, I think grief is something you carry with you your whole life. It's kind of like the suitcase, and the stronger you get, the, you know, it easier it is to carry, but it's still there in a lot of ways, and it is hard to unpack, because maybe you might unpack a little bit here, but something unexpected happens that reminds you of someone and you have to unpack a little bit later. I like to really, like I said, I really love to get into side characters as well and give them full stories and full lives to really bring that story to life and to make them feel real for everyone, because they're very real for me in my mind.
Yeah. I agree. I really liked, this is going to sound so weird, but the way I'm about to phrase it, I liked experiencing that grief with him, which sounds weird, but you know what I mean? Like it just, cause it was very real. And I think that it is something that does need to be addressed. You know, there's so many issues and things that happen that don't get addressed, but we need to be talking about them. And grief is something everybody goes through at some point or another. So.
Yes. And even like within movies, you know, you watch a movie and someone dies in the middle of an action scene. They're all like, we just got to go because the T-Rex is coming. Like, run. Right. You know? Like, there's never any time for grief. So I wanted to show, yes, this is a normal thing. Like, it can and probably will happen. So,
yeah.
I think that's one of the probably important things about YA literature as a whole is because, of course, the audience is probably a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. They may not have experienced a loss like that yet in their lives. Or if they have, they may think nobody else ever has. And that what they're feeling or what you're thinking might be something you're only feeling. And that's one of the, you know, trademarks, I think, of YA literature is it's about experiencing life in a real way. And I think that that comes through in your books.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of my goals always with writing is, you know, the world that we live in can be such a dark and hard place to be in for anyone. And I want people to go into my books and meet these characters and come out on the other side a little bit stronger and a little bit more ready to face the demons in their own lives and to hopefully conquer them just as their, you know, their favorite characters just did. And so that's always my hope, is to not only provide a distraction from this world, but to kind of build you up while you're away.
Yeah. I think you did a really great job of that with this book and A Curse of Gold as well. That's great. And I love talking grief, but let's move on to some love shipwreck.
Woo, shipwreck time.
Shipwreck love. Shipwreck time. Okay. So now you tell me how to pronounce it, Annie. Is it Aris or Aris?
It's, well, either one. I say Aris. Aris Wesley knows.
So we've got Aris, Royce and Cora. Mm-hmm. As I was reading this book, Eris comes along and I was like, okay, he looks good, but I'm not sure. Like, I messaged Sarah and I was like, Sarah, I think Eris is too good to be true. I don't know if I can believe this guy. She was like, oh yeah, totally. And then we find out he is too good to be true. Because you got to know, right? Any guy.
He's a liar.
Oh my gosh. Well, any guy who comes along and is all of a sudden just saying all the right things and doing everything perfectly, and somehow he is not at all turned off by her gold skin when everybody else has been, like, something's wrong there. But you feel like it's one of those situations where I'm reading it and I'm like, oh, Cora, don't be naive, you know, but she's learning. She doesn't know because she hasn't had these interactions. Everybody hates her. So all of a sudden it's like, ooh, somebody's showing interest in me. Right. Somebody likes me. So I think I can do this. She's almost, obviously her situation is different, but she's almost like Anna in Frozen.
Yes.
Because you're like, don't do it. He's going to be the bad guy. You know it.
No, stay away. Yeah. He's just such a wheeler and dealer. And like, you know, and like, I even try to play up, like, you know, the games that he likes to play are very, like, you know, all about conquering and like all this kind of stuff to just like give you like little hints of like, what is he doing? You know, like, and why is he hanging out with Prue so much? And, you know, like just different things. So.
And is he a blonde character?
I can't remember. He has dark hair.
Okay. For some reason in my brain, he's a blonde character and I distrust him as such, which is very interesting.
Royce has like blonde hair, but no.
My brain, Royce is dark haired and handsome.
You reversed it.
Well, however you want is fine with me. I don't mind. You picture my characters however you want. I really, you know, whatever makes you happy in your mind.
Yes.
That's actually like, I actually don't get, some people like get mad at me because I don't include a lot of physical description of like their faces and all this stuff. And I'm like, I kind of want you guys to like, imagine what you want to see, what would make you happy, you know, or not happy, or, you know, whatever. So I like to kind of leave a little bit up to the imagination there.
So Sarah may have a deep distrust of blonde men. That's what we
I think we did just establish that. Uh-huh. I think one of the things, like, for the most, like, I was like, yeah, he's way too good to be true. He's totally gonna like do something bad and betray her. But I think the thing that rattled me even more was not when he did betray her, because I was like, I know that that's coming, but the fact that he stole Royce's story. Like, he weaved this whole lie, gives her the journal, like, this is my journal and all of this bad stuff happened to me, and it's Royce's story, not his. And I was like, oh, like, that was even worse to me. I don't know why, but
yes. I mean, he would do anything, you know, to get the money that he needs and to, you know, work for the people that he needs to work for and everything. And if that's what it takes, then he'll do it. And it's hard because those people can be so charismatic, you know, and they can be so charming and draw you in, but on, you know, on the flip side, they're out there cheating everyone else, and it's really hard. So,
and he doesn't just betray Cora, he betrays Royce too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I found one line that I think sums up like when one of the moments you don't trust him. And that's how most of his stories end, with him being lucky to be alive. And I'm like, oh, you're that guy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I almost died. And I'm like, did you know? Did you
know? He's kind of like, it's like Captain Jack Sparrow, you know, all of his stories. I got off the island by sea turtles.
Yes, that definitely can divide. Although there is a character in a Curse of Gold that is definitely who I consider my like Jack Sparrow character. I don't want to like give anything away, but
no, but I know who you're talking about, and I totally agree.
You will know who that is and just how that person goes through the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I love Royce. Like, I think it's funny how, you know, when Cora first gets on the ship and she's there with Eris, and how you know, before he betrays them, whatever, Royce is so like, what's the word I'm looking for?
He's very stoic and
thank kind of you.
Hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was reserve. The word. Yeah. But it's like, as soon as. Yeah. And then as soon as Eris is out of the picture, he becomes a totally different person. And I'm like, wow, where'd this guy come from? I like him. He's great. And then he and Cora, yeah. I love them together and just how their relationship develops. And then the scene where they're like in between decks on the steps and he kisses her. I was like, that's like the best thing ever. Aww, I loved that scene. Yes.
I love when you meet Royce. Like, she's walking onto the boat and he's like standing up there. And I just have this image of like the wind blowing his coat. And I'm like, oh, there's that dashing debonair captain I was looking
for. Right. I'm like, okay, he looks good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, super stoic and not smiling.
And he knows it and he just doesn't care.
I do love the blue coat. Every time you described it, I just got this great visual image in my head of what it would look like. And I was like, oh, this is so great. Oh, I know.
I really love that he has gold on his coat because of Cora. Mm-hmm. Cora avoids gold because if she touches it, she absorbs it. She doesn't like how it feels. And then
as
a person, she accidentally turns them to gold.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, like, symbolically she meets Royce and he's covered in gold and she's like, whoa, I can't be near you. And so as the reader, you don't know whether or not that's like symbolic of bad news because he's wearing gold and gold is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a little like, I like to like leave you guessing. Like, I won't say much about this, but I'm working on a book right now. And all I'll say is don't trust anyone. Right. I love to play with that. Like, you think you know, but you have no idea.
I will say, when he said that he had, when Royce said that he had been in the King's Armada, I was like, ooh, like that just that one little line of him saying that when they first talked about it gave me hope, because I was like, oh wait, if he was in the King's Armada before, if everything works out at the end, then maybe he could be in the Armada again and then they could be together. So I was like,
right.
I held on to that like one line when he first said that for like the whole book, just hoping it was going to work out at the end.
You're like, yes, finally these people are like getting together.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So there are quite a few like pirate sword fighting scenes in this book, which I absolutely love, but I always wonder about what it's like writing those. Is that really hard to write? Or like, how do you go about writing a sword fighting scenes?
Honestly, I really love them. And everything I write plays out like a movie in my head. Like, I watch it happen. And so maybe like sometimes I'll have to like reverse it a little bit and then like, okay, nope, they hit that barrel. Nope, they tripped over that. Nope, they, you know, that. I think honestly, the hardest part is just making sure I vary the vocabulary enough. So I'm not like, he swung the sword, she swung the sword, their swords were swinging, you know, like you want to make sure you're like, he jabbed this way and she dodged, ducking under, you know, the fence, and then she, you know, leapt over, you know, you want to make sure there's good action. But I have this problem, like, if it doesn't work in my mind, like I can't see it working, and if it doesn't play out like as true for me, then I can't write it, you know. I'm not gonna be like, oh yeah, someone totally just did this, like, I'm like, no, like it has to work for me, like has to be feasible enough for me, and if it's not, then I'm like, it's out.
So. Yeah.
But one of the things that bothers me about any kind of action or movement in books is when I'm like, people's arms aren't that long. Like, that does not work. Or when you almost feel like people have too many hands and they can't actually be doing this many things. Yes. And you don't get that in these action sequences. Instead, you're just injured. Like, what's about to happen?
And then their injury just like magically goes away like a chapter later. I'm like, no, you got like your arm halfway sliced off. You're not like still fighting. Like, you know, like
you're bleeding to death.
Right. We need to stop and address that. Okay.
But I love how with your fights, though, the sword fighting, we have the extra added element of Korra being able to turn somebody to gold. I loved when there was the sword fight and she was trying to save Royce and she kisses him to turn him to gold so that she can save him. And then she has to change him back later. Sorry about that, but I didn't want him to kill you with his sword. And that was the only way I could save you was by turning you into gold when I kissed you.
That's really the world's most awkward, like, first kiss, like, ever. Like, so awkward. Actually, is it their first kiss? I can't remember. I think they have one before that. It's a staircase before that. You guys will have to remind me.
But I think so. I think the staircase was before that.
Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know.
I wrote it a while ago.
Either way, it was great. And I'm like, it's going to give him a bit of a complex about kissing you ever again in life.
Right?
Like, wait. Are you full of gold or are you empty of gold? I just need to know this first.
One's the prize. You never know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I want to talk about Captain Skulls because honestly, like when I was reading him, I was like, okay, so we get his name first, right? Captain Skulls. And I was like, ooh, that's an awesome name for a pirate. Like, it's perfect. But then we find out why that's his name. And then I started picturing this and I'm like, oh, that's gross. But it's fine. I watched Vikings, so I can handle whatever at this point. But like, you know, I mean, he cuts their heads off and then keeps their skulls. He's just quite a villain. Like, he is so strong. He's like the ultimate pirate. How did you kind of develop him? I mean, were you like, I need to have a really like nasty pirate, or just like, I don't know, he'll chop people's heads off, whatever.
I really just like, yeah, I love names. And some people are like, oh, that's such like a cheesy name. And I'm like, no, I love it. And it just so fits him. And so I said, okay, if we've got this character's name, let's build a history, like a lore almost about him. And, you know, just like, even like his face is so gaunt because he almost wants to see his own skull, you know, but that also just adds to like his creepiness and like how he can kind of, you know, go through the shadows and you don't even see him because he's just so thin and his cheeks are so hollow. And so I really just kind of loved that part of him. And I don't think he cut off skulls, I think, in the very first draft. But at some point he did. And he started to be like, I was like, okay, this guy, he's going to collect them. And not only is he going to collect them, he's going to be like, you know, Gaston decorates with antlers. He's going to decorate with skulls. Like, yes. What else can he make out of a skull? You know, he's like a skull crafter. He's like, oh, I can make a bookshelf out of skulls. You know, like if I just stuck together with some glue, like anything he can do with skulls, like, he wants to do it. And so like everything from like the skeleton on the mast of his ship to his flag, everything has to kind of tie in together because that's who he is as a person, and it becomes his identity and he embraces it because it is something that's terrifying to other people and it does make them afraid. And he will use, a bit like Eris, he will use anything he can to his advantage.
Mm-hmm. He's also so theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Captain Skulls, when I first like heard the word, I was like, that sounds a bit cheesy. And then you meet him and he's actually terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, wow, this guy is actually like, he's killed all these people and now he's putting candles in their faces.
Yeah. But you can kind of see why the pirates respect him still, because the pirates are like, dude, that's really horrifying. So he must be the best, you know? Like,
So
it's kind of like that weird respect among thieves kind of thing.
Yeah. And I love when Korra has her first like vision and she like visits him and she gets into the room and she's like, where am I? And then she sees all the skulls and how he's decorated them. And then she realized, and she has to keep telling herself, he can't hurt me here. It's not real. I'm not really there. Like, he can't, because he is so intimidating. I could totally see him. Like, I totally pictured him like on Tortuga in Pirates of the Caribbean, like the worst of the worst.
Yes. I mean, I loved like that. And, you know, there's just a couple other pirate movies that I'm like, yes, it's like all of these things just mashed together. That's the Pirate Island, like Cutthroat Island. If you've ever seen that one,
mm-hmm.
I watched that movie all the time growing up, like, you know, just pirates everywhere.
I love pirates. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is, but I am just like drawn to pirates and pirate stories. They are so fun. I love that Cora is the one who kills Captain Skulls in the end. Like, I was very grateful that you did that, because I've read books before where, like, you know, the main character has an issue with the villain, but then somebody else killed the villain. And I was like, that doesn't work. Why? This person should have killed the villain. So I very much appreciated that Cora was the one to kill Captain Skulls in the end. I thought it was just very appropriate. Very perfect.
Yeah. I'm all about girl power, and I want them to have agency, and, you know, even more than that, just be characters and be strong and capable. You know, if you're writing a Little Red Riding Hood retelling, it's not like, oh, Little Red Riding Hood, stay on the path. It's not safe. It's like, hey, Little Red Riding Hood, here's a sword, go and kill that wolf because you are capable. And that's what I want to do is I want to show, you know, young readers out there that women can do this. They can rescue themselves, you know?
And she does many times, because she also turns Aris to gold. She kills Captain Skulls. She does like all the stuff. Oh, she even...
the sirens.
Yeah. Yeah. The sirens too. By the way, I loved the sirens. Oh my gosh. We got
always
to that part.
So curious. Sorry, Leah.
You go. No, you're good. I was just going to say, well, I got to that part and I was like, are they going to be sirens? Like full siren? I just love sirens. I don't know what it is. And I was like, how are they going to get around this and figure this out and not totally get sucked in by them? So the sirens were a great inclusion.
Oh, thank you.
Generally, I'm always so interested to see how authors handle sirens. Because I feel like it's a very tricky thing, and to see how people use the fact that women can withstand their call and men can't is always so interesting, because everybody solves that problem in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the way you did it.
Thank you. And actually, I mean, the sirens were actually problematic for different reasons for me, because like in the beginning I was like, why doesn't she just turn him to gold? Like, so then that's when I realized, like, oh yeah, water is too pure to be turned to gold. Like, so that's, you know, kind of like what happens. And so she can't use her power. So that's kind of the first time she confronts something where she can't turn it to gold. Like, she's finally been like, oh look, I can actually turn things to gold, and it kind of helps. And then that's taken away, you know? So yeah. I just kind of throwing them into different situations and being like, here, little one, go spread your wings and fly, learn something new.
The whole book, I kept wondering, and I'm like, why is your kingdom like out of money when you can literally make money?
Right?
Yes.
But she was so terrified of her talent. And the only time it had ever happened when she turned a dude to gold. And then her uncle told her that he had gone mad.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, she just had this block against using her power.
Yeah.
And she finally embraces it. And then she's like, great, I'll be fine with the sirens because I can turn stuff to gold. And then she's like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. It's just such a complex issue, because I mean, she does have this power, but she saw what it did to her father, and she doesn't want to end up that way. So she's trying to just toe that line of like, what's okay, what's not okay, and how do I grow into this power? What do I do with it? What do I not do with it? And so it's just a really cool, interesting look at what I thought would happen to someone who grew up in that environment.
I love too that you bring the sirens back a little bit in book two.
Yeah.
Like, yes, they're back again. And in such a fun way. I won't say anything because I don't want to spoil book two in case anybody hasn't read it yet. But I love that they were included there. So here's another thing that I found interesting about this book that I enjoyed. Interesting in a good way, I mean. Captain Skulls is like our main villain, but there's actually kind of like three big villains in this book. So we have Aris and then Captain Skulls, but then at the end of the book, we have a third one who pops up. I was like, wait a minute, what? Uncle Theus. I mean, you know, he comes in as betraying too. So we've got like three villains. I was like, oh, that was a really nice surprise at the end.
Yep. Never trust anyone. I mean, and that's the thing is like when anytime power is involved, it is hard to trust people because you never know what they're after or what they think. And that's actually why the prologue is so important to A Touch of Gold, is because it sets up, if you skip the prologue, you're going to be like, what is this? What's happening between these two brothers? Because Theus is so jealous of Midas and thinks it should have been him this whole time. And as things get worse and worse, he's like, clearly it should have been me. And now I will take over, you know, because he finally has the contacts and everyone to make it happen through the pirates who need something to Aeris. And it kind of all falls into place that Aeris kind of owes the pirates and the pirates are in with Theus. And, you know, Aeris can move in circles where the pirates can't. And so it all kind of comes together nicely. And I mean, yeah, I could have done it where like Aeris and Captain Skulls were one and the same, and maybe, you know, that happened that way, but I think that would have been really, that would have been a lot trickier and more complicated. He wouldn't have been as scary, and you wouldn't have really have seen his skull collection, because he would have been aboard the boat pretending to be like Aeris Wesleinos or something, you know. So I think it was fun to kind of have that many villains. I don't typically do that, but you know, everyone needs a partner in crime.
I really liked that you didn't know, like, who was going to pop up and be bad. Because Aeris dies, and you think he's dead, and then he's not dead. And then he's really dead. It would not hurt me if the third book that you haven't written yet in this series that doesn't exist is, like, I have this brain of Hetty and Rat going on an adventure, and they have this mysterious villain that nobody knows, and it's Aeris!
Well,
this secret fan idea in my brain that that's how it goes.
In the original draft of the sequel, A Curse of Gold, Aeris did make a return, but I was told to take it out because we had quote unquote already beaten him and we didn't want to go down the same path again. But I thought it was really fun and I liked it because he's only been turned to gold. So theoretically, someone could turn him back.
That's very
true.
He
could get turned back by what happens in Curse of Gold.
Exactly. So yes. I was like, hello, fun plot point. And my editors were like, no, we're not doing that. And I was like, oh, sad face.
Well, yeah. Tell your editor that one of your readers disagrees.
10 years from now, like the director's cut, Annie Sullivan's director's cut of what should have happened, you know?
Yeah. You're like, well, Sarah said that
right?
It would have been better.
Oh, I know. I'm with you on that page. But hey, you never know. Maybe I will use some later.
Yeah. I did like how the three of them like worked together like that. I feel like it worked so well because like each one had their own part to play and was involved in it. And then we have, so with, because it's kind of Cora's fault in a way, how Uncle Theus dies. And so then we bring back Hetty into that. And then Hetty like has to deal with not only is the fact that her father's dead, even though she didn't have like a super good relationship with him, it's still her dad, you know? So she's trying to deal with those feelings, but then she's also trying to deal with the fact that Cora was the one who killed him. And so just like with Thips and Phipps, that carries over into the next book too, which I really liked seeing that too, because again, it's like sometimes, you know, I read things and things disappear and you're like, wait a minute. No, you can't just be happy again. Like 2 seconds later, like this is, you know, this, you have to feel those feelings, please. I want you to feel all the feelings. So I love it.
Oh, my father died. Oh, well, anyway, moving on, next adventure, you know, like there is that time and it does cause issues in relationships and people may pull away or act differently. And so, yeah, I really want to present like most realistic kind of path forward that I can for these characters.
Yeah. Well, and the idea that he was a bad person, he did terrible things, but he had also been Hetty's dad for her whole life. And so the fact that she can't just turn off 18 years of wanting his love and approval because in the end he wasn't who she thought she was, that's not how emotions work.
Right.
Yeah. However much we want to. I almost felt like Uncle Theus's like betrayal was the worst of all of them. Like Captain Skulls is bad. Captain Skulls is exactly who you expect him to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aeris lied to her, made her love him, stole Royce's story, betrayed them all. And then you get, and you're like, oh, that's terrible. And then you get to Uncle Theus and you're like, how could you, to your brother, to your niece, to the kingdom, to your daughter, like, how is this what you've done?
Because you know he had to be the one to tell Aeris, like, act like this, do this, find a way to make her happy by doing this, you know? And so that is just such a deep deep betrayal. And maybe he saw it as the ends justify the means kind of thing, where he's like, I will turn this kingdom around and make it great. But would he have? How was he going to do that? You know, I mean, and it means killing his brother, basically, and his niece. And like, I mean, and even then you have issues of who's going to take over. And, you know, people might challenge him. Like, you never know. And
yes.
Oh. Yeah. There was a lot there.
Oh, yes. A lot.
And it was good. Okay, this is just a silly thing, but I forgot to mention it earlier, and I did want to say this. I told Sarah this when I was reading it. I messaged her one day, and I was like, okay, so Cora. Anytime I picture Cora in my mind, the first thing that I picture is, like, the gold people in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Oh. Like, that's all I picture is, like, the woman, all of them, because they are completely gold. They're all, and I was like, okay, that's right.
That's like...
Like that.
That's the picture she sent me.
You can see I had I can't remember her name, but I had an artist draw some character cards as a pre-order giveaway for A Curse of Gold. So there are character cards of Royce and Cora out there somewhere, and I don't think I have any on my desk for once. I don't know where I've hidden them all. But if you go to my Instagram and scroll back a ways, you will find them. Plus, my Instagram is just a fun place to hang out because I do a lot of, like, book videos. So
They are delightful. I'm always looking through, and if you guys are listening, if you have not checked out Annie's Instagram, you totally need to, because it is really fun. I am always like, when is Annie going to post, like, another dress or costume video?
Another one ready to go. I'm like, should I post it today, tomorrow? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I should do it today or wait for next week. Cause I don't know. I just got back from Hollywood. So things have been like super, everything's in chaos, but it's fine.
I really loved the beach videos. Did you do beach videos or did someone else do them? I can't remember.
I did a mermaid one and a pirate one as well. And those were fun, except I went with my parents on that trip. And let me just say, all three of our suitcases were packed with costumes. So much stuff with me to film those.
Well, that was actually one of my thoughts. I was like, she doesn't live by the beach. She took a suitcase of costumes to the beach with her.
I took suitcases of costumes to the beach, okay?
Oh my gosh. I love that though.
It was a lot. We were like sweating. We were all at like 50 pounds coming back in our suitcases, because I was just like, oh, there's so many things to bring back. Because I didn't want to like leave the books at the beach. Like, I love these books. So
yeah. Important. So fun. Sarah, did you have any other plot points that we didn't hit yet that you wanted to bring up?
Just that I was betrayed when Thips dies.
Oh.
Very sad.
Do you want to know a secret that might make you feel better? I don't know if it'll make you feel better or worse.
What is the secret? I always want to know secrets.
So this is a secret. I've shared this in other interviews before, so it's not like groundbreaking, but I'm getting it to some readers out there. So originally, Phipps did not exist. Phipps didn't exist until almost one of the last drafts of the book, when my editor said, Annie, the stakes aren't high enough. Someone needs to die. Because again, I'm like, I don't like to kill off people. And they're like, heads need to roll. So I was like, who can I kill off? Because I was like, I can't kill off Rat or Hetty or Cora or Roy. So I was like, who else can I? And I was like, I can't kill off Phipps because now I'm attached to him. So I was like, oh, I will do the unthinkable. I will create a twin for Phipps and kill him. So that's how Phipps entered the picture. And it just worked so seamlessly because he was just so much like Phipps that, you know, they just fed off each other and it made the story even better in so many ways. But sadly, poor Phipps didn't make it.
It is a pirate story, so inevitably somebody does have to die. I kind of agree with that.
People die. There's so much emotion there.
Mm-hmm. Because it has to happen. Otherwise, it's like, okay, that was, you know, like everyone made it through just fine. Like, that's cool. And I love a good happy ending. Give me a Disney ending any day. But, you know, like, you do need those stakes to be there.
Yes. It reminds me of Veronica Roth, who is more than willing to appropriately, when the story warrants it, kill a character, and it is emotional and it is deep and it is fantastic.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, don't do it. You don't take those people from me.
Yes. I recently finished a book series by another author, and because of some hints of things that I read, I knew someone was going to die. like I knew someone was going to die. And I felt like I thought I knew who it was, and it was not who I thought it was. And it was so much worse than I thought it was going to be. So many tears.
I just
but that's why we read, right? Is to feel things.
Yeah. That's right. I just pretty much go into most of the YA books I read now expecting somebody to die. Like, even I just finished Faking Reality by Sarah, I don't want to mess up her last name, Fujimara? Something like that. Anyway, it's brand new. It just released like a week ago. And so good. But it's, you know, it's just, it's a contemporary, like best friends to lovers romance. The main character is a 16-year-old girl who is on an HGTV show with her parents. And then she, you know, has her best friend who she grew up with, and she ends up having feelings for him, but he doesn't reciprocate the feelings. But there's another character in the story, another family member who you've become very attached to. Like, they're one of the minor characters, but you love this person. And then I was like, I think they're going to die. I think this person's going to die, because I've just become so, like, it's just a regular contemporary like romance. And I'm like, somebody's going to die, because I'm just so used to reading fantasy and all these books where people die. Anyway, I'm not going to say if they do or not, but.
Yeah, I can always tell I've been watching too much of the CW when I don't expect people to stay dead.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I had been watching, you know, like Arrow and Vampire Diaries and all these things. And then I was watching Bones and someone dies and I was like, oh, but he's not really dead. And I'm like, Sarah, this is not that kind of show. Like, there's no timeline. There is no supernatural. Vampires do not exist. This guy is truly dead.
Yes.
Like, he's not.
I'm so hard to read new authors because I'm like, I don't trust you yet. I don't know what you're going to do to these people. Like, do anything. Anyone could die.
Yes. That's where you look for the blurb. And like, if certain authors have given the, hey, I love this book, you're like, oh, this is that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that was a really great discussion. I loved it. Annie, why don't you tell everybody where they can follow you on social media, where they can buy your books, what your website is?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at, I think it's ANNSULLIVA. So it's like part of Annie Sullivan in there. You can find me on TikTok at Author Annie Sullivan. I have a website. You can just Google Author Annie Sullivan and I'll pop right up. And yeah, come find me on Facebook. I post a lot of fun content there too as Author Annie Sullivan. So yeah, just come find me, guys. I also, like, on my website, I have a contact form. If there's something you loved about the book, drop me a line. If there's something hated, maybe don't drop me a line, but you know, want to interact. I'm always happy to talk with fans and fellow readers and writers. So don't be shy. Don't be a stranger.
And I will post links to all of that too in the show notes for today. So you guys can just go there and click and get easy access to all of Annie's social media. And I'll put a link to be able to purchase her books as well. So, well, this was so fantastic and so fun. I absolutely loved having both of you here. Such a great discussion and chat and getting to talk about the book and learn about some other things in your writing. So thank you so much for both of you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me and for having such a great conversation.
Yes. Thank you for having such a great Patreon perk, Leah.
You're welcome, Sarah. And on that note, shameless plug, if you too join my Patreon, you could also be a guest on YA Book Chat. Check the show notes for the link to my Patreon. All right. Commercial's over. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and we will chat again soon. Today's episode featured the book A Touch of Gold by Annie Sullivan. I'd like to say a special thank you to Annie Sullivan herself for coming on the episode and chatting with me today. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram, and don't forget to like and subscribe so you get your episodes as soon as they are available. And hey, if you're on Apple Podcasts, why not give this podcast a 5-star rating and write me a review? It really helps get the podcast noticed. YA Book Chat was created by, is hosted and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.